Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So last week I lifted up the theme of perception as the theme of the talk, and this week I think I'll continue on that theme, a little bit of a different angle. I just want to bring up a sutta that the Buddha gave. It's Anguttara 10, Sutta number 60, the Giri Mananda Sutta. And it's a discourse where Ananda comes to the Buddha and says, the monk Giri Mananda is seriously ill, suffering. Would the Buddha go and visit him and give him some relief or some encouragement? And the Buddha says, "Well, actually, I'll teach you these 10 perceptions, and if you go and tell the monk Giri Mananda about these teachings, then that will give him some relief, or his illness could go away completely." And so the Buddha gave Ananda these 10 reflections or 10 perceptions, perception of impermanence, perception of not-self, perception of unattractiveness, perception of abandoning. Perception of the drawbacks, dangers, perception of abandoning, perception of dispassion, perception of cessation, perception of the non-delight in the entire world. Perception of the impermanence of all formations, and mindfulness of breathing, anapanasati, and then gave a bit of explanation of each of them. And then Ananda went and taught Giri Mananda, and Giri Mananda's illness abated and he got up. So it was an effective sutta. So it's a sutta that caught my attention a long time ago. And it was one of the early times that I took the monks out to Dao Dam, and that was I spent the time that we were there just talking about that sutta, and it's a well-known sutta in the forest tradition. A lot of it is because oftentimes that's about all the medicine that you got. So a lot of it is the that's these contemplations or perceptions, investigations they just brighten the mind because you're lifting up all these different angles of truth of the Buddha's teachings, and the mind becomes very, very bright, and that has its effect of the body becoming at ease when they can brighten the mind and establish the heart in Dhamma. I mean, a surefire way of getting. I mean, there's great descriptions in the, especially in the Vinaya, of monks who are thin, sallow, veins sticking out on their body, ill, and great way for that to facilitate that is to spend your time thinking about yourself and all your problems and all your difficulties and all your obsessions and views, and that's a great way to make yourself miserable. So this lifting up the mind to perceptions of Dhamma, perceptions of truth. So these different perceptions are, and it's a different, slightly different, like last week when I talked about perception, I used it much more in the sense of the sanya khanda, the function of perception within the khandas, oftentimes its main use, but this is the use of perception as a part of part of practice, part of training, a way of directing attention to perceiving things through a certain light, through a certain way of viewing and associating. That perception is sort of like a perception, association, memory, but to be consciously lifting that up as a part of practice, a part of training, and in the sutta, because the Buddha explains each of the 10 perceptions, and each, not each one, but most of them begin with the refrain of similar to like in the, well, many suttas, but particularly Satipatthana Sutta, gone to the forest, to the foot of the tree, to an empty hut, and reflecting thus. So it's like, these are themes that one takes with one when one is going into solitude, meditating, practicing, training the mind, and to this. And the first is anicca sanya, the perception of impermanence, perception of inconstancy, and that. Imagine Jeff is. He tends to translate it as inconstancy. Impermanence is its ordinary translation, and it's not that one is right and one is wrong, but it's more like sometimes it really helps to have these different translators giving a slightly different angle at how to view terms of the Dhamma, terms within the how the Buddha expresses things, because it's the word nicca is and particularly because I say like Ajahn Jeff has done a lot of translation work and of course he's done a lot of translation work of everything, but the Vinaya, he's put a lot of the books of discipline. Did a lot of there's a, two volumes in Buddhist monastic code that are really exceptional for monastics to understanding the training and the rules of discipline and conduct. But there's a term that's used concerning the like a regular donor of alms food, nicca patta, like a food that is constant, that is regular. So say that somebody who is a monk would go to somebody who's offering food on a regular basis or on a constant basis, so that sense of nicca as constants, and then anicca is what is, say, inconstant. Comes up with that. So it's a bit helps to expand the perception of impermanence to go beyond what is just so like rise and fall or impermanence of phenomena, but in terms of inconstancy, irregularity, uncertainty, bringing up that perception of impermanence, inconstancy, and the Buddha explains it in terms of the, you know, the impermanence, inconstancy of the five aggregates associated with clinging, the upadana khandhas. So it's a form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, viewing them through that perception of impermanence and inconstancy. And then the anatta sanya is the second one, the perception of non-self. And that is reviewing and contemplating, reflecting on the non-self nature of the eye and forms, ear and sounds, nose and odors, like the six sense bases and the six sense objects, and so viewing that through the lens of not self, so that's a the means by which we experience ourselves and the world around us, and seeing through that perception of impermanence of not self. The next one is asubha sanya, perception of unattractiveness. And asubha gamatana, and so then that's the classic hair of the head, skin, and various internal organs, fluids, so these various parts of the body, and so that asupa, and reflecting on it in terms of the that sense of unattractive. Subha is attractive, beautiful. And because sometimes it's, you know, it is translated as, and I was looking, looking at a translation of the Girimana Sutta, and it was sort of the perception of the ugliness of the body. And it's really asubha, it's like unattractive, or foulness of the body. So it's there's but the that unattractive, it's sort of I think in it's probably like Indo-European languages, the some Pali Sanskrit, and in different European languages, certainly English, and you have something called a privative prefix, and it's the and it's where one is describing the lack of something, or privation of something, or the absence of something. So there's subha, is, and then asubha. So there's the beautiful and the unbeautiful, the attractive and the unattractive. And you in I was just saying, so like in English, you'd say, I'm using a privative prefix on, say, like inarticulate, somebody who's not articulate, or undemanding, so somebody who is not demanding. So this can be seen in both positive and, because say like undemanding is actually a positive description of somebody. So it's a, but it's a way of, I would say, how the language is structured. So, but that asubha is a taking, some attractive, and there's unattractive. There's that element, those elements that are unattractive, and that, but the because also in Buddhism, in meditation, like your asubha gamatana is a meditation practice, attending to the unattractive elements of the body. But then there's also, in terms of meditation practice, there's also the cultivation of the subha nimitta, the sign of the beautiful, and it's actually really important in the cultivation of jhana, because you want to be eliciting that kind of delight and bhiti and sukha, that kind of joy and happiness. And so then that's as a means of facilitating the mind settling and coming together in composing itself. In terms of, say, practice, one is also, one of the tools of the meditator's toolkit, say, asubha gamatana, or asubha sanya, is a perception of the unattractive, and that's specifically to help dispel that sensual desire, and that kind of obsessing with sensuality, and it's that stirring up the mind. So it's a helpful way of settling, bringing an opposite to the mind that helps to settle it. Adinavasanya is the perception of the of drawbacks, dangers, and that's also focused on the body. When the Buddha describes it, the Buddha also talks about the various drawbacks and dangers of the human body, and that it's of all the different illnesses that this body is prey to, and it's quite extensive. There's illnesses of the, because there's eye illnesses, ear illnesses, nose illnesses. So all the six senses are prone to various kinds of ailments, and then different kinds of diseases that are possible, I've mentioned it many times, but for myself, one time going to when I was in hospital, being ill, I was just recuperating from an illness, and I wanted to learn more about it, so I went to the hospital library to see if I could find kind of description about the illness and whatnot. Then of course you walk into the hospital library, and this is a provincial hospital, but still it had a room much larger than this, and it was just stacks of medical books, and it's all about all the different diseases that are possible within the human condition. I got more knowledge than I wanted to at that point. But it's also interesting when the Buddha talks about the drawbacks or the dangers of the human body, the various illnesses that one is the body is prone to, is also things like change of the season, the imbalance of the elements, also diseases that come from not looking after oneself, diseases that come, or illnesses that come from assault or attack, and sort of as well as from past karma. So it's like there's just all of these different things that are possible, because sometimes there is this thought, or you hear it as if everything is due to past karma, and that's really, the Buddha dispels that quite clearly, that there's all these various ways, and say past karma is only one of them. So drawbacks, and then the next one is abandoning. Pahanasanya, which is the same word that is in the first discourse of the Buddha, setting in motion the wheel of Dhamma, Dhammacakka, Pavattana Sutta, as the in relationship to the second noble, where the Buddha lays out the Four Noble Truths, the second noble truth, the cause of suffering, but then the Buddha points to the kind of appropriate response or due duty that one has to the second noble truth, the cause of it's the abandoning. Say abandoning of desire is the appropriate response. So so this is a abandoning, a perception of abandoning. And when the Buddha describes perception of abandoning, it's the abandoning of sensuality, ill will, of harming thoughts of sensuality, thoughts of harming, and those, of course, are the in the Eightfold Path. That is aspects of sankappa. So, like samma sankappa, like right. Thought or right volition, right intention, right application of will, for right is the thoughts of abandoning, sensuality, ill will, harming. So those are the, directly the sort of the, say, what are micha sankappa, or say wrong volition, wrong thought. So that abandoning. And of course, when we're able to abandon that and let go of, we see the danger in it, and the harm, and the complication. And that is allows the mind to be established in what is truly wholesome, again, brightening the mind, brightening the heart.
The next one is the Virata Sanya, and that is the perception of dispassion.
Or the dispassion, or the perception of fading away. It has both connotations, and sense of dispassion, fading away, letting something fade away. And that's and the description that the Buddha gives is one of my favorite kind of just short verses or short descriptions or idioms that the Buddha used, and I've spoke about it sometime during this pansa. That sense of this is peaceful, this is sublime, the stilling of all formations, the relinquishment of all acquisitions, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation. And it has a it's that sense of this is where that which is truly peaceful, truly sublime, that's where it lies, is in that letting things fade away, letting the various thoughts, moods, obsessions, views and opinions, kind of addiction to becoming and being and identity, just allowing that to fade away. And it's interesting that the next, like the Nirodha Sanya, the perception of cessation, is described exactly the same. And this is peaceful, this is sublime, the stilling of all formations, the relinquishing of all acquisitions, the ending of craving, dispassion, cessation. And one is like the dispassion and fading away is maybe like more, that's like the process, or part of the process aspect, and Nirodha is more like the fruit of that, the result, how one experiences cessation, and that sense of you're paying attention to, like with, especially with cessation, really paying attention to stillness, paying attention to stillness, to settling, allowing things to become very still, allowing the whatever impulses there are in the mind, rather than feeding or identifying, just allowing it to cease, allowing it to be still. And that stillness, when one really pays attention and dwells in that, that's, again, that's that inspiration, the joy of Dhamma, the settling of the entanglements that have been so much of what we've identified with the entanglements and the things that have complicated our life and our hearts, and just to turn to and to dwell in that which is peaceful, that which is sublime. And it's always present. It's always accessible. It just there has to be the perception of it. If the mind has never even conceived of a possibility of perceiving dispassion and cessation, of stilling and settling, then the mind will never go there. And so it's like that, lifting it up. This is why these this is all of these perceptions are a part of Dhamma contemplation, Dhamma practice, cultivation of the path, and that sense of the instruction that the Buddha gives to someone who is practicing. Gone to the forest, gone to the foot of the tree, gone to an empty hut, reflecting thus. And that's bringing up these ways of perceiving and experiencing. The next one is the non-delight in the entire world. That's it. Sambaloke anabhilatana sanya. And that anabhilatana is that non-delight in all the worlds, or the entire world. Sambaloke. And that's a... this and the next one are like the disenchantment, nipida, because the next one is sabba sankhara anicca sanya. So the that perception of the impermanence, inconstancy of all formations, whether they're coarse or refined, whether they're external, internal, whether they're part of the, whether they're mental or physical, it's every kind of possible formation condition. It's this pervasiveness of it's all impermanent, unstable, inconstant, uncertain. And so those are both that. So non-delight in all the worlds, impermanence of all formations, eliciting the response of nibbida, which is like disenchantment. And disenchantment is and even Bhikkhu Bodhi translated as disgust, which is, in English, it's very strong, but it's also, especially in the word like with nibbida, it actually has a logic to it, because it's like the, you know, losing the taste for, you know, like it's just not that interesting. So there's a disenchantment. There's a cooling of the passions. And the cooling of the passions are not just desire, but also, say, aversion or speculation or doubt. That settling of that disenchantment with reacting in an unskillful way, or engaging in a way that is anything less than clear and wise, so that sense of how we respond to the world and to the self. I'm being able to bring that quality of clarity and stillness to how one engages. So just how one is, you know, in similar in that sense, like abandoning, letting go, releasing, relinquishing. You know, when we begin anything, usually we begin like engagement, whether it's mental or physical, or some project, something that we're doing, or even our meditation, a meditation session. How do we begin? And almost, you know, invariably, it begins with, you know, with some kind of, you know, desire or aversion or confusion in some way, and to engage with a sense of coolness and clarity and relinquishment and a disenchantment, a settled quality of the heart, and that actually frees up a tremendous amount of energy for practice and for engaging the object of the mind. Again, I mentioned with like that subhanimitta, the engaging of the heart with the sign of the beautiful. And this is, it's like Anapanasati, because the last one is Anapanasati. And, you know, so often, and again, the Buddha goes through the classic 16 stages of Anapanasati. And, you know, and so often, it's you begin breathing in long, one nose, one breathes in long, breathing out long, one breathes out long, breathing in short, one nose, one breathes in short, breathing out short. You know, by that time the head's on the chest and are starting to, already starting to bob and weave. That's engaging with not that clarity and energy, and it takes kind of energy and interest in stillness and seeing clearly, so that one can fulfill those all the different aspects of mindfulness of breathing, fulfill the path, so that stepping back from that engaging with desire, aversion, confusion, is that abandoning, settling, disenchanted with the prospects of this renewed becoming, renewed entanglement with as that I, me, and mine process, which is, it's tiring. It's incredibly tiring and boring. the world is inevitably the same, and for just ourselves, it's just sort of same old, going around and around. So that giving ourselves that opportunity just to experience, oh, this is peaceful, this is sublime, that relinquishment. So it begins with perception and working with it, practicing with it, training the heart within those perceptions. So that's a very important discourse. It's a very important tool in our toolkit of practice. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.